Hello there, and welcome back to the Social Distancing Football Podcast. I'm Owen Murray, and I'm here with my co-host Lathan Joblin. Today we're going to take a quick tour through some new ideas in Europe, including the Beneliga, England starting 11 again, and a stalwart Caps record about to be broken. Don't go away. We'll be back soon. All right, welcome back to our main segment. We're going to get into the meat of this episode, and you've seen it in the title, you've seen it all over. We're going to be talking about the Beneliga. So you've probably heard about it. It's sort of come up more and more in the past month, but there's been a proposal from several teams in the Netherlands and in Belgium to combine the Belgian Pro League and the Eredivisie into one big, for lack of a better word, Super League. So we're going to talk about the pros, the cons, how it's going to work, and as a little bonus, what we would think about some other leagues combining. So I'm going to swing it to you, Lathan, to kind of break it down for us.
Well, the Beneliga is, like you said, the combination of the Belgian Pro League and the Eredivisie. Not everything has worked out, and it's still mostly an idea. However, 25 Belgian teams have voted unanimously to create the Beneliga. Relegation is not decided, but would likely mean that teams are relegated back into their national league. I don't know how that would work if more Belgian leagues are relegated than Eredivisie teams, for example. But as far as what teams would go into the Beneliga, there would likely be a number of invitations to the biggest teams in each league, 10 teams from the Eredivisie, 8 from the Belgian Pro League. The teams that would likely be invited from Holland are Ajax, PSV, AZ, Utrecht, Feyenoord, and Vitesse. Anderlecht, Club Brugge, Gent, Genk, and Standard Liège from Belgium. The four spots left from the Netherlands will likely be decided by team performances over the past 5 years prior to the creation of the Beneliga. And the same for the last three spots out of the Belgian League. Cup competitions would likely be unchanged, and there would not be any national combination in those. It would still just be nationally organized. But why is it happening? The goal would be to make a stronger league with more competitiveness in Europe, and also to keep the best players in the league longer because they have more to offer. The Eredivisie is yet to vote on whether they would do this or not. Like I said, the Belgian Pro League has already voted. And it would likely happen in 2025 because both the Eredivisie and the Belgian Pro League have TV deals that expire after 2024. More TV revenue would be gained because there's a wider interest. So that is another benefit of the Pro League, or of the Beneliga, excuse me. But there are also lots of cons, namely how difficult it would be to sort of combine these two leagues, how to work everything out, and how to satisfy the fans. This would likely mean that the Eredivisie and the Belgian Pro League would be dissolved in replace of second tiers for the Beneliga, which most fans would be incredibly unhappy about. However, FIFA has now decided to encourage this. They used to discourage the combination of different leagues, but really since the last president of FIFA started really pushing for the combination of Liga MX from Mexico and the MLS. FIFA has been much more accepting of ideas like this. As far as how would this maybe encourage a European Super League, I don't think it would affect it that much, because while this is creating a Super League in itself, I don't think that a European Super League would happen, because the Champions League is already expanding to basically become what the European Super League would be.
All right, so there you have it. That's the general idea of the Super League. We're going to see an 18-team league with probably second divisions in the respective countries, or this is like, because it's 5 years out, I've also heard there could be a like second division Beneliga, which would see just those teams relegated to that division, which would, I mean, it has pros and cons, but that's exactly what we're going to talk about now. So we're going to sort of dive more in depth into what could benefit. And I'll just start with the obvious, which is TV revenue. You talked about it. So the TV deals for the Belgian Pro League and the Eredivisie expire in 2025, which is when this league was proposed to start. So what we'd see is we'd see a huge influx of money. I don't have the exact numbers, but these teams, like if you had the old Ajax team, they would like feasibly be able to keep players like Frank De Jong, De Ligt, and Hakim Ziyech, because they have the audience and the money to keep them there, which obviously would result in a more talented league, which people want to watch. You want to watch better football. So ultimately, that would kind of influence sort of the transfer budgets of these big teams.
And also, it is now literally just two countries watching. It's one more country watching this league. So there's just more of a population, which would increase TV revenue. And I think the main idea is to increase competition, Belgian and Dutch competition in Europe. Because
yeah, so
Ajax has gone out in the group stages since they made the semifinals every year. And I mean, do Belgian teams ever make it into the Champions League?
Usually one team, I think, right? couple years, it's been Bruges, but...
Yeah, I think Bruges is normally in there. But yeah, other than Club Bruges, I don't remember the last time I saw a Belgian team in there.
Yeah, and like really what we want to see is we want to see more competitiveness. And it can be in the Champions League, because with that increased transfer budget and the money to keep players there, like hopefully it won't be that everybody wants to draw Club Bruges in their group. They want it to be that like Belgium is a true powerhouse and that they can realistically compete for the latter stages of the Champions League.
Yeah, and I think just the biggest difficulty will be trying to get fans on board, because the Belgian Pro League has been going since the late 1800s. There's no way that people are going to be happy about the Eredivisie and the Belgian Pro League being dissolved or becoming second tiers.
Yeah, so it's like we're going to see, unfortunately, like we're not going to see probably those teams that like one team in a rivalry might be a top team, but the other side might not be in this new Pro League, which is why I think the preservation of the cup competitions not as a combined competition would be better, because then you still get to see A, like those teams that have their rivalries compete, and it'll be in a knockout format, which just makes it all the better, realistically. I'm not saying that it is the best option, but it's like if you're going to have this Pro League where you're going to be splitting up the rivalries, you can at least keep the cup competitions alive. So the Orange Becker, and I can't remember what the Belgian Cup is.
Yeah, and I also think that it would create new rivalries, like Ajax could, while they're currently big time rivals with Feyenoord, could also end up becoming rivals with Anderlecht or Club Bruges. which fans probably don't care about as of now, but it might be kind of fun to see you once it starts.
Yeah, I mean, like, just seeing, like, how close the league will get. It's like, right now, it's like we just see a couple teams on top of each league, but, like, realistically, we could see a top six like the Premier League where it's, like, genuinely going to be a toss-up of who's going to win it each year. Because, I mean, right now, I could probably tell you that Ajax will win the league, the Eredivisie, for the next 5 years and probably be correct. Or four out of the next 5 years. But, like, having sort of that unpredictability will draw audiences as well, which is what they really want.
Yeah. What do you think this would mean for potentially other leagues combining? Because there have been talks before about Rangers and Celtic joining the English Premier League. There have been talks about, I believe, Scandinavia and Scotland leagues combining. And yeah, like, what do you think this would mean as far as other leagues potentially combining?
Yeah, so one big difficulty for leagues like that combining, where you're going to have an international league, is travel time, where you'll have fans having to travel longer distances to get to another team stadium, and that it is hard for rivalries. And that's something we see a lot in MLS. We're American, obviously. So something that happens a lot is people try to create artificial rivalries. And what happens is, like, there'll be, like, MLS has this thing called Rivalry Week. And they'll match up teams who are, like, close, or, like, have not a lot of teams have history, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So, like, one of the most famous rivalries, the Cascadia Derby, between Seattle and Portland, is exclusively almost has history. So that's something that you lose. It's like Seattle and Portland are two of the closest cities that we see, besides teams, obviously, like the New York teams or the LA teams. And they've been competing since, like, the 70s. So you sort of lose, when you're starting over, it'll obviously develop over time, but you lose the ability to, like, drive, for example, the I-5 corridor down to Portland and go see an away game if you have to drive a day-long trip. So that's something that sort of could, if I have to drive to Mexico to see the Sounders play an away game, it'll be harder to get sort of that away presence. But on the other hand, it does bring in more competitiveness. We see the CONCACAF Champions League every year, but there's only five MLS teams in there. So obviously an MLS team has never won the CONCACAF Champions League. So it would be really interesting to see how they compete versus the Liga MX teams on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I think FIFA is really pushing for the combination of the Mexican League and MLS, because, I mean, their last president even said that it could be the greatest league in the world, and I don't necessarily think that he meant by talent. I think he meant,
in terms of, like, competitiveness.
Competitiveness within the league, revenue, and general interest, and talent development, maybe. But yeah, it would be...
Yeah, because, like,
a very
something that we see, yeah, go ahead. Something that we see, like, in the Premier League is, like, Americans will sort of pick a team to support that you don't, like, sort of when the advent of the Premier League happened, like, there were a bunch of sort of epiphany moments, but when everybody started to, in America at least, started to focus on the Premier League, everybody would sort of pick their favorite team, but they got the opportunity to choose their team, which was something that, obviously, like, generally, you support the team that is in your city. So something sort of an opportunity there with, like, the growth of a new league is you could see this sort of opposite happening where European, I think this is what they're hoping for, like, European people will start picking, hey, I'm going to support the Sounders, or I'm going to support Pumas. And sort of, like, drawing that global audience, which really isn't something that you see, and moving away from the whole retirement league narrative. Because although we like narratives, obviously, it's pretty detrimental to the league just to think of it as a league where, like, older players who aren't good enough to play in Europe will come to make money and just score a ton of goals.
Yeah. Well, I think we're probably done with this topic for this section of the podcast, so we'll see you back in a moment.
Hello, and welcome back to our final segment of today's podcast, where we're going to talk about some hot takes, some things we loved, and just give you guys some inside info on how we're looking at the world of football today. So, Lathan, what do you have up first?
This one's kind of a weird one, but at least for England, maybe not as an overall player, I think Dean Henderson is better than Nick Pope. While most people would say it's obvious that we should take Nick, or that not we, England should take Nick Pope as their starting goalkeeper, I think Dean Henderson would be a lot better. While I think that Nick Pope is the better shot stopper between the two, I think Dean Henderson's shot stopping ability is still very good, and he's much better with his feet than Nick Pope. Nick Pope, as far as distributing goes, isn't the best, and just, he's not going to be able to pass out from the back, which is what England want to do.
Do you think there's any way that they would like think about rotating the goalkeeper? And this is something we see a lot with outfield players. Like, a manager will rotate the starting 11 based on the game plan he wants to employ. So last week we were talking about how Trent would be better in a back five for England, there are other players who would operate better in a back three or a back four. But do you think that could be something that happens with England? Like, could it be that in a game where they're playing, say, France, and they're going to need to stop a lot of shots, they would rather have Nick Pope in there just for the security. And then if they're playing against a team where they're going to be controlling the ball more and they can play out from the back more reliably, they'll have Dean Henderson in?
While that kind of makes sense in your head at the beginning, the only reason I think they won't is because they need to have a coherent back line. We've seen it with Liverpool this season. If you're constantly rotating the midfield and back line, there's no glue. They don't know where everyone's going to be. Whereas what we've seen with City this season, they've constantly had John Stones and Ruben Dias as the center backs, along with Ederson, and they end up gluing together and really whittling out all the mistakes that they have in them, typically. So if you constantly rotate the goalkeeper, the person who's commanding the box, nobody's going to have any idea of what the goalkeeper's going to want in their head because they don't have enough time to get used to them.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought, just because obviously national teams have that. Like, they'll be in camp for a couple weeks out of every couple months, so it's just you don't have that same familiarity.
Exactly. And even if a club team was to rotate goalkeepers, it would make a little more sense because they have training almost every day with both of the with every goalkeeper in the starting 11.
Mm-hmm.
Or not in the first team squad, not starting 11.
Yeah.
Your hot take though?
Mine isn't so much a hot take, just something I think really should be mentioned. So a lot of you guys will probably know that we're big fans of the women's national team. And
U.S.
The U.S. women's national team. And they're better than the men's, which gives us some hope for national pride. But something that is bringing national pride is a possibility for tomorrow's international against Sweden. So Carly Lloyd, who has been time and again one of the best players in the world, could have her 300th cap. And just to give you some comparison on that, the most capped men's player, Ahmed Hassan of Egypt, has 184, so it's not even close. And that is an incredible milestone for a player like her to hit. And she's been so consistent. And honestly, she's one of the best the game's ever seen. She's played in Europe and at home, but we all remember her performance in the 2015 Women's World Cup in Canada, just a few hundred miles north where she scored the half-line goal and the first half hat trick, and it was crazy. But what a lot of people don't realize is, like, her peak is still not over. Like, she is still one of the top players. Like, to play for the women's national team, the U.S. women's national team, you have to be one of the best players in the world. And she is, like, one of the most dependable players, and it's insane that she's getting to the 300 mark.
Yeah, I just think that really all that's in order is a congratulations.
I just wanted to show that, I mean, that's really an incredible achievement.
Yeah. Especially now being the most capped current player in world football.
Yeah, the most capped active player is pretty insane.
Yeah. Well, I think that brings us to the end of today's podcast. Thank you for listening, and join us next time.
Yep, we're really happy to be here. Really happy to be recording. Thanks for supporting us, and have a good weekend.
Bye.